Love Bristol.
Love, love, love.
BCFM 93.2.
A Bristol kind of love.
You say that today the power of darkness, in its eternal war with the power of light, is threatening to come out on top. If this continues on an ever-increasing scale, the inevitable result will be a return to the brutal lawlessness, poverty, and insecurity of the Dark Ages. Do you really believe that about the modern
day? I do believe that. The violence and that sort of thing that's going on today is unbelievable, and the government are not controlling it. And that doesn't go only for this country. It's all over Europe and the United States worse than ever. And they've just got to take a line.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. The big question the media never ask, who's really in charge? Journalist and author Kevin Carhill's won a tribunal victory this week for our privacy, and he's here to tell all from the courtroom where even the press were excluded. Plus, we take a look at the death of the fascist Grand Master of Italian Freemason Lodge that controlled Italy, P2. He died this week, Licio Gelli, aged 96. And we expand to have a look at the facts behind the so-called mystery of the P2 Master. Also, recent revelations in the Daily Mirror about 200 years of Freemasonry ruling the British Empire, a religious cult at the heart, rather like Northern Ireland's Unionist Orange Order. But as Britain declines, is Freemasonry still clinging on as a network of secret power today? Plus, Martin Summers' chance to take us on a tour wherever he wishes, the world's hotspots, if he can fit it in. We start this week with Kevin Carr, who is joining us. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Tony.
Tell us about this tribunal case that you've been involved in, and why were the press excluded?
Well, not sure. It's a secret tribunal anyway, and it doesn't normally admit press, public, anybody.
So who is it? What's the body?
It's called the Investigatory Powers Tribunal, and its job is actually to keep the spooks safe.
To keep the spooks safe or us?
You must be joking. Us. We don't count.
So
it's
okay,
the don't count court.
Tell us a bit about it. What sort of cases come up there? What powers has it got?
It has some powers, and it can pass judgment on what the spooks are up to. For most of its life, it found for almost nobody who ever appeared complaining about the spooks. It turned down every case. In the last 2 years, that's changed, and it's occasionally given judgments against the spooks.
So tell us about your case then. What were you complaining about?
My case is really simple. The Americans are running a mass surveillance program here in the United Kingdom. And what really got up my nose was they're stealing children's data. They're intercepting emails between children aged 3 and 17. And
well,
they're
not many 3-year-olds send emails, do they?
Yeah. My child B in this is 4. And he's got an email account. And he struggles, but he sends the odd one. But it would be the bulk of children in the middle, you know, from, say, 7 to 17, that this is about. Now, the emails that are intercepting emails in this country is a criminal offence. It's that simple. There's no ifs or buts.
But hang on, the GCHQ does it for a living. They do it all the time.
But without a warrant. They have warrants, so we are led to believe. And at the moment, I would believe, funnily enough, that they are sticking with the warrants. But the Americans have no warrants. And what's really bad about it is the data they're stealing and the emails they're stealing are sent to the United States. The kids can never get them back. They can never change them. And when they get to the NSA headquarters in Fort Meade, the data is turned into profiles because there's so much memory in computers nowadays.
Well, hang on, how do you know all this?
Well, it all appeared in the Snowden revelations in The Guardian 2.5 years ago. And I read them, and I have a background in the kind of computers that are used in these systems. Before I became a journalist, that's where I worked, in big systems. So I understood what Snowden was saying. But now, how do the Americans do this? They use Microsoft, Google, Facebook, Yahoo, YouTube, and they pick up everything we put on those internet services. That's how they do it. They don't kind of sneak in, and they don't steal stuff off the cables. They have these 9 commercial companies sending them everything they get.
So is there any quid pro quo? I mean, why would Twitter, for example, hand everything over to the National Security Agency? Surely they're going to say, well, we can't do that because then our users won't like it.
That's what they should have said. And all of the companies involved have huge teams of lawyers. I mean, they don't employ lawyers by the platoon. They employ them by the battalion. And that's what they should have done. They should have gone to the American government and said, you can't make us commit crimes in foreign countries. But they didn't. And they were paid for what they were doing as well.
Why should they bother? Because actually it's in another legal jurisdiction. Why should they care about it if they're headquartered in the US?
Well, they should care about it because it's criminal here. It's really simple. They're all at risk.
Okay, so what sort of argument were you putting in the Investigatory Powers Tribunal? And what was the response of the judge?
Okay, I went to the tribunal because the police, who are responsible for crime, have done nothing. The police and all the police forces in the United Kingdom have known about the interception since 2013, and not one has done anything to stop it, to prosecute the offenders, nothing.
So why is that then? I come back again to this whole business of a quid pro quo. Surely these big technology companies are going to be getting something from the NSA. What is it?
Money. They're doing this for money. They're stealing. But on the one hand, I'm saying the police have done nothing and this crime has gone unpunished, undetected. What's really funny is they were stealing the police data as well. The police not only didn't protect us, they didn't protect themselves.
So, okay, so how much money then? Have you managed to figure out to Google, Microsoft, Facebook, all these people, Amazon, are they involved as well?
No, Amazon are not on the list. It was just there are 9 companies.
They were talking about basically social media companies, aren't they? And Microsoft obviously is rather more than that. It's the company that runs Windows, so it runs the operating system that everybody else kind of sits on.
Yeah, Microsoft is the serious issue because the system that is using Microsoft is Parliament. So not alone could the police not protect themselves, the government couldn't, Parliament couldn't protect itself. Microsoft has been stealing the parliamentary data since 2007. They were the first company to sign up to the National Security Agency on this one.
It just strikes me as a bit peculiar, all this. What about, are any of the military around the world using Microsoft, using Windows? Because if they are, possibly that all that data is being stolen too by the National Security Agency.
This is all the data. Most of the government institutions in Britain use Microsoft. And not one of them. I pressed Parliament to get an assurance that they weren't doing it. I pressed my university. And nobody has had the nerve to force Microsoft to admit what they're doing. And remember, I sued Microsoft, and they said, no, the courts in England have no jurisdiction over us here. Tosh.
What about the whole issue of individual MPs, though, confidential conversations that they're having with constituents? What about lawyers, confidential conversations they're having? A lot of MPs, of course, are lawyers, but with their clients. What about journalists who would need to protect sources and also don't really particularly wish to have the authorities or the government watching them as they're doing research, even writing articles?
Well, let's have a swipe at my own trade first. The Guardian never followed up its own story properly. It never explained to the British public what the National Security Agency was doing with the data, creating profiles which they could then use to influence people. And how does that link? You may not have noticed, but all the big data, the social network companies, all are now news providers. So if you need to blackmail somebody, you look up their private stuff, and I'm thinking politicians, you look up their private stuff, you combine it with the public stuff, and you've got a perfect profile.
Actually, old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers, we were talking about this kind of thing last week, weren't we, with bribery, the attempt to blackmail MPs, and this was particularly to do with the Tatler Tory scandal in the Conservative Party. But it just seemed like there's all these opportunities with this technology opening up for this as well.
There is, but it's a bit ironic, because in the US Constitution, as written in 1776, they actually said that your private communications should never be intercepted unless there is a warrant, i.e. some criminal offence has been committed.
The US Constitution doesn't say that about Britain. The American NSA is quite legitimate for them to go and snoop on any other foreign country's private communications, isn't it?
Yeah, can we come on a tiny step? The European Court in October found as a fact that the United States was doing this, pointed out that foreigners have no protection at all, none. So if our government is not willing to budge, then we have no protection. We have been, we have had everything nicked.
So do you think that the US, through the military, through diplomatic links, are maybe leaning on the British government a little bit over this, Kevin?
The British government's, our government's position is utterly incomprehensible. This programme is stealing data from Parliament, it's stealing data from the royal palaces, it's stealing data from government ministries. Never mind it's stealing the kids' data and all our data, and the government hasn't budged. It's done nothing. The government has actually attempted to protect the American companies. After the European Court judgment, which ended this farce of safe harbour, the British government is putting out statements saying it didn't happen, quite literally. Our government says that the European Court never found that the Americans were doing mass surveillance in Europe and the UK, but it did. I can tell you the paragraphs 31, 32 and 33 of the judgment say the United States is engaged in mass surveillance in Europe. And
so what is what you're doing? How does that relate to this safe harbour judgment then?
Well, I've come in at a very low level. I've gone to the local police and said, this is happening. Here's the court judgment and it's children's data is being stolen. Now, the response so far is they're not prepared to do anything. The change is that the tribunal, this funny tribunal, has written to them saying, here is Kevin Cahill's complaint.
Well, the Register, which is quite a good, any techies out there will probably come across this, newspaper for techies online, is talking about data sovereignty after Safe Harbour. Max Schrems, he's the... I think isn't he from Austria originally, who put this case in?
Yeah, Max is the one. It's unbelievable.
They're saying
Max
he's
is a student.
They're saying he's got a lot to answer for. The Austrian is single-handedly responsible for bringing down a key transnational data agreement that's left cloud service providers scrabbling for legal counsel. This is either a good thing if you're a privacy activist concerned about intrusive US surveillance policy, or a confusing and worrying one if you're a provider or customer of cloud services. Now, personally, I would not use and touch the cloud service with a barge pole. It's like allowing your private personal data, particularly as a journalist, to go immediately to anyone that would wish from an international level, government level, to snoop on it, take it, steal it, do what you want with it. Why would anybody put their information in the cloud? It's not private at all.
Well, the cloud provides... particularly because not a single government in Europe, and they've all known about this for 2.5 years, a single Austrian student, age 26, took this on, and he won. He got He got one of the most extraordinary judgments in modern history. The court found a whole country guilty of spying on its allies. So Max, safe harbour was one of the biggest... it was a straight, upright con.
All he asked for, wasn't it, was... I think it was a kind of freedom of information request of some sort to Facebook, saying, I want everything that I've ever posted on Facebook, and I want it now. And initially, Facebook said no, but then he actually took them to court, and he got it. But then this is a result of that.
Yeah, his data, after 3 years, Facebook had, wait for this, 1,200 pages on him. And
I mean, is that just stuff that he's typed into Facebook over all that time?
Just chatting to his friends. He's a student. And all his conversations with his pals, everything, was on that disk, held in Fort Meade as well as by Facebook.
So how does what you've done relate to Max?
Max is a kind of, what, a comrade in arms. Max has done what... it's just... well, there are all the governments of Europe, all having their data nicked. Their military data, their government data, the lot. And it takes this offended 26-year-old student to bring the whole farce down. And he did.
Martin, what do you make of this? This is data sovereignty. Apparently, data used to float around in somewhere called the cloud, which wasn't really specified which country it was in. Now, everyone's saying, well, hang on a minute, you can't have that data there.
Well, there's obviously what they're actually doing is run way ahead of the legal framework, and they didn't bother to even think that they needed a legal framework for all of this. None of this is very surprising. We know that GCHQ, for example, have been bugging everybody's phones in Britain. They admitted recently, didn't they, that they'd got everything for the last 10 years from people. Where's the legal basis for that? There isn't one. And as I say, the US Constitution was written in the 18th century. They made it clear that all private communications should be private unless there's a reason for them not to be. Absolutely. In other words, the government does not have the right to open letters, listen to phone calls or anything like that, unless there is some reasonable suspicion.
Well, there's another case that's been going on for quite a while now, Kevin, if I can just interrupt you. This is the one of a guy called Kim.com, an extradition hearing. He's in New Zealand, I believe, and the United States are trying to extradite him. He was running file sharing websites where data was shared that apparently some of the people who own that data didn't like it. I think a lot of this has got to do with music and video files, things like that, that were being shared by Kim.com on his websites. And he's a German-born media mogul. Apparently, no, he's not going to be sent to the United States to face trial. But Judge Dawson will now have to decide whether defendants have a case to answer in the US. At the moment, he's not being sent. But, I mean, I don't know if what you're saying relates to this as well. It seems like slowly but surely, as the law is kicking in, there are cases which are bubbling up around the world over this.
Well, the opposition to the United States attempting to extend its jurisdiction to all countries is now rising. Countries are beginning to figure that if a crime is committed in their country, they try it. That the United States does not reach in, fetch people out, and try them. But there are two issues, and they are totally separate. One is copyright about the music. This was, you know, theft, the theft of copyright material. The theft of private data is a very different issue. And given that the Guardians never explained what's been done with it, I mean, most people would say, why do the Americans want all that data? The answer actually was printed by the Guardian, but they never followed it up.
But they can't get it back now, can they? So what's the point of all this?
Well, I don't believe the American government would ever give back the data. And the companies... the only way to make them do something is to sue the companies. And the data, the European court found for Max, and the orders, safe harbour was thrown out, and the orders came down to investigate the complaints. Our information commissioner has dozens of complaints, not one of which he's looked at.
But Kevin, most people will say, well, there isn't really any problem about National Security Agency or GCHQ seeing what's on my Facebook page. It's there in public anyway.
Well, no, that's voluntary. You know, if you want to share stuff, I mean, I think people share far too much, and the curbs will, people will eventually decide, no, maybe they don't want their whole lives on the web. You know, forget the spooks and forget the Americans and everything. But I was talking to Max Schrems lawyers today, and they're fundamental. They say people are mad. They put far too much. They give far too much to the internet companies. And the companies, the nine internet companies are facing, I mean, an incredible crisis. Because if ordinary people say, no, you can't take all my data and you can't follow me around town every day, you know, when I go around Bristol, I don't want you following me. Their whole business model collapses.
Well, what is the business model for this then? What is the point of taking all this data? How can it be used? And why might you say, well, I don't mind, they can have my data, and then possibly in the future regret it?
Yeah, they make their money from selling advertising. It's that simple. And with all that data, they can target you. You know, you're passing a donut shop and your phone will bleep and say, hey, the donuts are cheap. They can track you everywhere. And it's been completely overdone. It's out of control at every level anyway. But for a foreign intelligence agency to be operating here, stealing all the children's data and stealing all the government data, and the government does nothing.
Martin, this we were talking about this last week, weren't we, with cars. In the future, cars are going to be sold, they're so-called smart cars, which will do a similar kind of thing. So I imagine they will hook up with the private data bank, that profile that they've got of you, and tell you, yes, here's time to buy something. But of course, all that, most of it, is going to be targeted against rich people, not poor people.
Well, I mean, it's a very complex area, isn't it? There are two things here. One is the use of data for commercial reasons, and in some senses, if once you've actually started using Facebook or whatever, you could argue that you've admitted to you're going to let your data be used. Although, as Kevin's pointing out, they may be the weak link in the chain because they're the ones who can be sued, unlike the NSA. But in any case, the whole justification for this complete surveillance of the population is supposedly the terrorist threat, etc. And there is a lot of evidence to suggest that the Western intelligence agencies are deeply involved with creating these terrorist threats. And secondly, that the idea that they can watch everybody all the time, real terrorists know how to get round that. They know how to create false data. They know how to create false identities. I mean, they know not to use electronic equipment. I mean, in Iraq, the resistance worked out pretty quickly not to use mobile phones, and they were pretty successful at blowing up the US soldiers.
If somebody buys your profile, they can wreck your life. Not too difficult, particularly if you're a MP, a lawyer, a journalist, etc. Anyway, Kevin's put together a little sketch about all this. And we're on the bridge of the USS NSA at Fort Meade, Maryland. At his desk, Admiral Michael Rogers, captain of the good ship NSA, in his mouth is a lollipop. Behind him, right, the Stars and Stripes. Behind that, covering the entire rear wall, is a huge flag bearing the skull and crossbones in white. Scattered around the desktop are model aircraft carriers. Sunk in the desk, a satellite bearing a gun. To the Admiral's right, a drone armed with rockets on a stand. A Mickey Mouse doll straddles the drone. The Admiral looks up, switches lollipop from right cheek to left cheek.
What do you want, sailor?
He barks, and a figure approaches him on his hands and knees across the floor, bearing papers in its mouth.
Sir?
The figure squeaks through the papers, saluting and falling flat on its face.
On your hands and knees, sailor. On your hands and knees. You're in the Navy now.
Sir?
What do you want, sailor?
It's the news, sir. We got a first, sir. The sailor we got a first, sir.
The sailor mouths through the papers.
Right. Before God blows it, we get it. Tell me, sailor, tell me another scoop for the good ship NSA, hey?
Sir, the Euros are going to hammer us in 4 days.
Huh?
shoots lollipop from side of mouth furiously, staring down at the figure beneath the edge of the desk.
Sir, they're going to say we're a bunch of lying, spying bastards, sir.
Hey, sailor, they and whose army?
Sir, no army, sir, just lawyers, sir.
Nuke 'em. We've got 4 days. Nuke the scum.
We can't, sir. It's a smoke-free zone over there. It might affect us over here.
Get out. Get out a drone, sailor. Zap the scum.
Sir, you think the President of the United States will agree, sir?
Who the hell is the President of the United States, sailor? Round here, I give the orders. Not some bozo lawyer in downtown Washington. Get a Grim Reaper airborne, sailor. Now, get him in their beds. Get him in their homes. Say, who the hell are these guys anyway?
They, sir, are the European Court of Justice, sir.
They are the friggin' what?
Sir, like the US Supreme Court, sir.
Who let those jerks have a court? A court? We won the friggin' war. Get that Reaper in the air, son, now.
The sailor advances to the desk, still on hands and knees, with papers in his mouth. He removes the papers from his mouth with his left hand, supporting himself on his right hand. He shoves the papers towards the Admiral.
The death warrant, sir, for the European Court of Justice, sir. We got to do this by the book, sir. They are all lawyers, sir.
They are a threat to the national security of the US of A. Sailor, got that. They just forfeited the right to their miserable lives. Friggin' lawyers. Go, man, go.
He shoves the papers back to the edge of the desk.
Sir, they ain't signed, sir.
The Admiral comes around the desk. He holds the sailor by the shoulders and stares him in the eyes. Mano y mano. Switches lollipop from left cheek to right cheek. Fast.
This is covert, sailor. USA's only. No Brits, see? How many we've got to kill?
29, sir. One of them's a Brit, sir.
The friggin' Brits can go to hell. Kill them all.
Yes, sir.
The sailor departs. The Admiral twirls the model drone. He switches lollipop from left to right furiously. Well, I think you made the point quite well there, Kevin, that actually this is the US military. Why should they take any notice of what the European courts say? They don't really want to do that, do they?
No, but the companies are in the firing line. The US military and the US can sit it out, but the nine companies can all be sued. And Max Schrems is busy organising that. He's got 100,000 people signed up now to sue these people.
Where do you draw the line then between the US military, which is, you know, largely unaccountable like ours, it seems to sort of do what it wants, and these corporations that are almost like they're the kind of shop front for the National Security Agency behind the scenes, particularly Microsoft?
Well, our military are supposed to protect us. There has been a monumental failure, particularly of GCHQ, to warn the politicians that this was going on.
But they're pals with the National Security Agency. They're not going to warn anybody, surely.
No. The mistake is going to turn out to have been made by one single man, the former Director General of GCHQ, who was a linguist, not a lawyer. He thought PRISM was wonderful. He never guessed, because he didn't, you know, and he wanted the UK to have a little mini PRISM that it would run against everybody else as well.
Okay, well, we'll leave that subject for now and go on to talk a little bit about the Syria conflict. Kevin Carhill, I wonder what you make of what the decision by the British Parliament a couple of weeks ago to the RAF to get involved in bombing Syria.
It's very hard to know what it means. On this one, Jeremy Corbyn has a rational position. If precision bombs were precise, that would be maybe okay. They're not. There will be an escalation in civilian casualties, in civilian misery. We've turned the bombs on the oil supply. Civilians will suffer monumentally, and I doubt if it will be effective.
Well, before we hear from Martin Summers on this again, several weeks in a row we've been dealing with Syria. In fact, probably not quite on and off for the last year or so. But let's have a listen to a chap called William Engdahl, and he is pretty much persuaded that much of this is to do with Israel's control of the Golan Heights, which they took, I think it was during the 1967 war, because this was it the 73 war? Well, we'll see. And so let's have a listen to what the journalist William Engdahl has to say on it. Now, also I'd like to put out an appeal for all the British mainstream media. Let's at least give William Engdahl a bit of an airing over in Britain, because people have hardly heard of him, and he's one of the real experts on the region. Let's have him on BBC Five Live and on the World Service, please.
Israel is in bed with ISIS as well as with the Saudis, which is not surprising. And they reportedly get three-quarters of their gasoline in Israel for their economy from ISIS, stolen gasoline and refined gasoline product and so forth. The Israelis also are behind a rather bizarre project to drill for oil in the occupied Golan Heights, which were stolen from Syria back in the 1967 war. The United Nations Security Council, the General Assembly of the UN, passed resolutions underlining that the Golan Heights belong to Syria and is an illegal booty of war taken by Israel illegally. Well, now an Israeli company owned by a Newark, New Jersey company called Genie Energy claims in October of this year to have discovered a huge oil field, huge, in the Golan Heights. The Israeli government gave permission to drill, and Israeli ministers actually said, well, the chaos and confusion in Syria, where there's no real functioning government, is a golden opportunity for Israel to plant the flag in the Golan Heights permanently. And then Netanyahu went to Washington early November, and the item on the agenda with Obama was, Mr. President, would you please support Israelis' right to take the Golan Heights from Syria? Well, the board of directors of Genie Energy is a cast of dubious characters, if there ever was. It includes Dick Cheney, Mr. Iraq War of the Bush administration. It includes Jacob Rothschild, who was a business partner of Khodorkovsky, Yukos Oil, back in the early part of this decade, or the last decade. And it includes the former head of the CIA, James Woolsey, among other dubious characters, Larry Summers, etc., and Rupert Murdoch of the News International Corporation, the media mogul of the United States, Fox News, the New York Post, you name it, the London Times, and the Sun. And so this thing is a geopolitical hydrogen bomb planted right in the Golan Heights by Israel and these U.S. interests that want to foment wars. So who can say what this is, the intention behind it? Maybe it's to create the last battle of Armageddon. But there are some pretty insane people playing with fire here.
Well, this has been coming out very clearly, has it not, that the evidence that the Russians have presented to the UN shows that the ISIS oil supplies were going out via Turkey through Sirhan, I think it was, and most of it was ending up in Israel. And, of course, they're buying it at a discount because it's illegal oil. The Genie Energy has been, I can't remember the name of the company.
Genie Energy, yeah.
Yeah, they've got all of these kind of high-level Western billionaires involved in it, and this is what this has all been about. And of course, what the Russians have been doing is hitting those oil convoys, which is why the Turks then shoot down their plane, because they don't want the oil supply from ISIS to be cut off, because that's what's funding ISIS, which is still being used as a geopolitical tool by the Israelis, the Saudis, and the Western powers to try and overthrow Assad.
When Genie Energy, it's called, that William Engdahl was just talking about there, when they've announced this oil discovery in the Golan Heights, the stock of the company went up 20% in a day.
Yeah, despite the fact that the price of oil is falling. So yes, clearly there was a fiddle involved. But look at the board. I don't believe it. I wasn't aware of that. I've just learned something. But Rupert Murdoch, doesn't he ever give up?
No, I don't think he does. It's interesting that, you know, this sort of thing isn't being reported on Fox News. I mean, we've only got really the BBC and possibly ITV in this country that might report this, because they're not going to report it, are they? Then we've also got here another clip from William Engdahl from the same interview he did on Russian Sputnik Radio. The interviewer asked him where he thought all this was heading. After he mentioned Armageddon, I thought it was quite useful to hear what William Engdahl had to say about that.
Yeah, we're really in a huge strategic confrontation, and I think if we're conscious about the strategic reality that there is no, these sanctions against Russia are no will-o'-the-wisp from the side of Washington. They are a prelude toward an escalation under, most likely at this point, a Hillary Clinton presidency that would be supported by this war complex, a military-industry complex of the U.S. and Wall Street banks, to hold on to their hegemony. They're losing it everywhere. The Chinese have just opened the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. The British are involved in that project, which is indicating that London will go where the strongest wind is blowing. And the strong wind is not blowing out of Wall Street these days. We're seeing an empire like Rome in the 4th century AD. We're seeing an empire in a collapse phase and using the only weapons they see they have, and that is war. And I don't think this is a viable long-term strategy. So I think we're in an era where anything can happen. And if we understand that, I think we'll come out of it.
Well, that's William Engdahl, the German-born, I think, US historian and writer and journalist. Martin, what did you make of that?
Well, Engdahl's stuff is always pretty good. I think we are seeing a confrontation between the Russians and the West, and it's come to a head in Syria. It's very confusing to see what the British government's position is, but I think they're still supporting so-called moderate rebels who are, for example, Al Qaeda Syria. Petraeus in the United States, the former, you know, guy who used to be in charge in Iraq, he's openly said, well, we should openly ally with Al Qaeda as the lesser of the two evils against ISIS. And this is all from a Russian point of view and from a Syrian point of view. I mean, you've been arming and training these people all along. Your Turkish allies and your Saudi allies and your Jordanian allies have been working with your special forces to arm and train these people. In the last few weeks, they've dropped them anti-tank and anti-aircraft equipment. So one of the anti-aircraft missiles that they dropped to the Al-Nusra Front or one of the other groups was used to shoot down the Russian helicopter, which rescued their second pilot after the shootdown. And the quality of the debate in the British Parliament about all of this was pitiful. And I repeat what I said in the first hour about Roland Dumas, the French foreign minister, who was on French TV in 2013 talking about what happened in 2009. Said, I was approached by British officials before the Arab Spring about a plot to run an armed uprising in Syria. In other words, when the history books come to be written, the role of MI6, the DGSE in France and the CIA in starting the war in Syria will be absolutely clear. And that is a war crime. It's not Assad who should go to The Hague. It's the relevant MI6 and CIA officers.
One of the curiosities, though, is that this, I think it's not as clear cut, and I think the Russians have a bigger problem than one might imagine, because they've got an internal terrorist problem that they have suppressed in Chechnya. And you often find that in every sort of IS outfit, there's a Chechen element. You know, the ones who got kicked out of Chechnya by the Russians are turning up everywhere. And there's not much of a plot behind that, but it was an easy one to manipulate. But could we flip back to something odd? If you read the Western techie media, the big hacking problem, well, there are two of them, the Russians and the Chinese. The hacking done by the Russians and the Chinese taken together is less than 3% of the hacking done by the NSA. You know, there's a myth as well about the good US and the bad Chinese and Russians. And we're all victims of it. We're all told, oh, they're the bad guys and these are the good guys. If the Americans are the good guys, why were they here in the United Kingdom stealing children's data?
Good question. And also, earlier this week, spoke to former psychological warfare officer Scott Bennett, because he was involved when he was working for US CENTCOM in tracking down terrorist financing. And he found this guy called Abdullah Aziz in Saudi Arabia, who was doing a tremendous amount of terrorist financing. And for all we know, still is, because instead of acting on the intelligence that he was getting for the US military as a US Army officer, they arrested him and put him in jail on a trumped-up charge. It does rather make you think that maybe that they just don't want us to know that the terrorist financing is going through UBS, for example, the giant bank in Switzerland, which was behind a lot of the LIBOR fraud too. So let's have a listen now to Scott Bennett talking about Abdullah Aziz and also Bin Laden, who he realised were using these UBS accounts to fund terrorism, with the full knowledge, it seems now, of the United States Pentagon. They don't seem to want to act on it.
A lot of this is still being brought into the courts, and it hasn't been classified, so I can talk about it. I never talk about things that are classified, but what I was given by the whistleblower himself, for example, was the bank accounts of Saudi Arabian wealthy royal family and other people, one of whom was Abdullah Aziz. And I won't say too much about him, and I won't say the bank accounts because of the bad guys who are listening to this, and I'm not going to give them free intelligence. But Abdullah Aziz was one of the key contributors to the terrorist operations in the Middle East. And he was a Saudi, and he was connected with Rudy Giuliani and the Oil for Food program that had existed prior. There was also the Osama bin Laden connection to Union Bank of Switzerland and his brother being a UBS account holder. I did finalize and submit Abdullah Aziz, his bank account information from UBS that Brad Birkenfeld had given to me, the actual documents that had the account numbers and the money that he had and the donations and the charities that he gave to, and how this was getting into the hands of bad guys on the field. And not one person in the U.S. government or the U.S. military ever debriefed myself or Brad Birkenfeld about those accounts. That's where treason has occurred, because everyone who's lost a son or daughter in these wars could have had their son and daughter given back to them. They may not have lost a leg or arm had these bank accounts been stopped, frozen, or the money tracked to the original donors. It's only because of President Putin stepping up and drawing attention in the G20 is a lot of this stuff now coming out.
Problem here, Martin Summers, is that if Scott Bennett is right there, former US Army psychological warfare officer, that none of these people is going to want to freely admit to having committed treason, are they?
No, they're not. But if they have committed treason, they've committed treason. And ultimately, we have got to face down the NSA and the CIA and all of these other organisations which are actually operating outside the law and supporting and training terrorists, the same terrorists we then claim to be fighting.
Yeah, well, Scott was working at CENTCOM, US CENTCOM, which is actually quite an important factor we never hear about in the mainstream media here in Britain, in actually running some of these Middle Eastern wars.
Well, indeed. I mean, there's a universal net. There is a global hegemony which is being challenged, and that global hegemony, you know, they break the planet up into certain. There's AFRICOM, CENTCOM, etc., and they want full spectrum dominance, as it said in the Project for a New American Century report.
I asked Scott a little bit about, because I mean, you know, he could be anybody. I asked him a little bit about what was CENTCOM. Where was he working?
I worked at U.S. CENTCOM, which was U.S. Central Command. It's in charge of all of the Middle East war operations. I worked in the Joint Interagency Group, which was all of the agencies of the United States government working on tracking money supplies of terrorists. So I worked with CIA, State Department, FBI, Homeland Security, the Department of Treasury, all of the intelligence sectors and all the government agencies who are designed to track down terrorist finance. That's why I know Brad Birkenfeld and his 19,000 bank accounts were the gold standard of intelligence that we should have been given, but we were denied. We were denied by Eric Holder and Lanny Breuer and President Obama and Hillary Clinton. So all of that intelligence came to me quite accidentally. And when I got it, let me tell you this, Tony, I sent it also to the British Embassy in Washington, D.C. I sent it to the British because it was unclassified, and I knew British soldiers and British contractors or being killed or wounded in the 9/11 wars, because all of this money was flowing unstopped and unchecked by these Swiss banks into the hands of the bad guys.
Into the hands of the bad guys. So I asked Scott Bennett a similar question that we heard Sputnik Radio asking William Engdahl about where he thought it was all heading this.
I had an intelligence person contact me and said Friday things were going to get dicey. So make sure you've got some money taken out and protected, because Friday may be the incident on the day when they pull something. How this is going to go forth in the future, I think you're going to have the NATO, British, U.S. Strike Russia in the Syrian area. They're going to pull a false flag gas attack or some major event that's going to legitimize and justify a U.S. NATO intervention and attack against Russian forces. That's going to be designed to try and get all of NATO and the U.S. and Europe into finishing the destabilization of Assad.
But Scott, hang on a minute, because the Russians have made it absolutely clear they're not going to allow that to happen. They've got their base, their very important naval base, Tartus, in the eastern Mediterranean on the Syrian coast. The Russians know if they lose that, they lose their influence in the region, which they've been hanging on to for really since the Napoleonic era. The Russians have been hanging on to. They're not going to allow that.
And I know that, and the Russians know that.
So the Russians are not going to allow.
They don't know that. Really? They think the Russians are bluffing. And see, they think he's going to back down. They think he's not serious. He doesn't want to risk. I think there's a delusion and an arrogance that has infected the Western mind, where they really are divorced from reality. The Russians aren't like that. They're a very rustic, sort of knuckle-dragging, raw mentality in a lot of respects. And I like them very much. But the U.S. and the Western NATO, European, they think they're the epitome of civilization. They think they're the climax of humanity, and therefore they need to sophisticate these barbarian Russian hordes.
Martin, I wonder what you make of that, the idea that you've got these amazing people with amazing egos that are out of touch with reality running the war over in Syria.
Well, they've already. I mean, look at what they tried when in 2013, when Cameron came to Parliament, he was asking us to attack the Syrian army on the basis that they'd carried out the chemical weapons attack at Ghouta. Although, as we pointed out on last week's programme, all the evidence now suggests that chemical weapons attack was carried out by the Al Nusra Front with the aid of the MIT, the Turkish intelligence services, with Saudi money, with sarin supplied from Libya, presumably by MI6 CIA. And then they have the cheek to come back 18 months later, say, sorry about all of that. In actual fact, we're going to attack the ISIS, the people who are trying to overthrow Assad. They're the bad guys now, except that all the evidence shows that they've been supporting ISIS. The Russian general staff, the Iranian general staff, the Iraqi general staff. The Iraqis are about to kick out the British and the Americans from Iraq. That didn't appear anywhere in the parliamentary debate that we had in this country a few weeks ago. Do you realise that the elected Iraqi government doesn't want you there because they think you support ISIS? That's what most people in the Middle East believe to be true, and that is a fact.
Okay, well, let's move on now to look at the death of Licio Gelli, this fascist master of the P2 Lodge. And I spoke to, he's a former music producer, now turned permaculturist, Charlie Holmes, a friend of mine over in that region of Italy, see what he had to say about Freemasonry in Italy.
Italy was united by British and French Freemasonry. So, I mean, Italy is kind of founded by Freemasons, as was America. But, I mean, Italy is seriously Masonic. This area, Tuscany, is like total. I mean, they can totally control this area. And I think they totally control this country. The Grand Master of the Grand Orient of Italy is Stefano Bisi. He is the director of the newspaper, which is 20 miles down the road from me, and 29 miles from Arezzo, where Licio Gelli lived. So, I mean, if you start putting pins in the map, you know, there are a lot of Masonic things going on here.
Yes, that's Charlie Holmes there. And I also asked him a little bit about P2, which is this Masonic lodge which had a lot of political power back in the 1980s, which was then discovered.
Propaganda Due was founded in the late 19th century, early 20th century, around 1900. And it was specially founded for people in public life. So it already existed long before Gelli came along. But But he was then given this role to take over this lodge, which had existed for 60-odd years, and get more public people involved, basically. And he got, officially, the list is 1,000, which is what they found. But the real list was probably more like 2,000. Anybody, you know, the armed forces, all the politicians, all top lawyers, anyone who was top of the game was on in P2.
And Charlie also described how Licio Gelli effectively ran the country from his offices, or actually, no, a suite of apartments in a big hotel in Rome.
Gelli worked for NATO, who set up Gladio. I think that's quite significant because that the bombings of Bologna Station and things like that. He actually was found guilty of involvement in depistaggio, they said it, and he was hiding evidence or shielding people. He was involved behind the scenes with the corrupting the course of justice. So he got 8 years, but he didn't actually go to prison. He was on in house arrest there. Obviously, the P2 is a big one. When they discovered that, that was a big story. The American Secret Services and NATO with Gladio, well, I would say, was probably the biggest thing. But then he was like the boss of Italy. I mean, he controlled everything. They call him the puppet master because he had so many people, and so many people came to see him. Fernando Imposimato's book describes how Gelli had two apartments in the Excelsior Hotel in Via Veneto, in Rome, really downtown central Rome, right next to the American Embassy. And in the area, they were just about everybody. The right-wing terrorists even had an office down the road in Via Sicily. So Gelli really, you know, he almost was like a, it was like a coup, really. Gelli controlled everything.
Martin, I wonder what you make of all this, because it does sound like Gelli was running a parallel government, a secret government in Italy.
He was, and Imposimato is mentioned there, and Imposimato, of course, was the former head of the Italian Supreme Court, and Gelli was eventually convicted and got 8 years, but didn't serve any of it. So, in other words, it's not as if the processes of justice have not been carried out against these people. The evidence in Imposimato's book, La Repubblica dei Strani Impuni, The Republic of the Unpunished Massacres, is very clear. Virtually all the terrorism in Italy, right-wing, left-wing, and Islamist terrorism, was being run from the by Peter to this Freemasons group, which was heavily infiltrated and directed by outside forces, that is to say British and US intelligence.
What about parallels here, though, in Britain?
Well, I think in Britain, we shouldn't think of this as Italy. What went on in Italy was not a peculiarly corrupt situation in Italy. P2 was integrated into NATO's plot to control what was going on in the rest of Europe.
It's very interesting what Charlie was saying there about Freemasons being there to control, or at least anyone in public office. Because it seems to me, if you're swearing an oath to your fellow Masons, a blood-curdling oath, effectively a death threat, you're in absolutely no position to take any kind of public office at all.
Well, you've got all these different secret societies operating. You've got the Skull and Bones group, the Bullingdon Club, whatever. I mean, to my mind, these kind of criminal elites will always form groups, whatever you call them. I mean, we didn't know that what P2 was called P2 until it was outed, in order to influence things behind the scenes. And of course, it makes a mockery of so-called democracy. There is no real democracy. There's a facade, and behind that, the military-industrial complex, the financial services industry, and basically the mafia run what goes on.
One of the most interesting things about that interview for me, Kevin, was him talking about the head of Freemasonry for the whole of Italy was the guy that ran all the newspapers.
This was really quite. But bring it closer to home. This all started with the strategy of tension, which the right invented. Then the place it exploded was Northern Ireland. Now, what's emerging month by month in the courts is that MI5 were running both sides. The war could have stopped in 1972.
Okay, we'll leave it with that thought. Time to sign off now for the Murdoch News at 7 o'clock. Thanks to our guest in the first hour, Screen Counsellor for Redland, Martin Foda. Thanks also to journalist Kevin Carr, who you just heard there. Our sister show, Dialect, has been dropped from the BCFM schedule by the chair and the manager, but it's still available as a podcast where you can hear an interview with Scott Bennett there in full, and also with Charlie Holmes. You can hear November's special on George Ferguson and the Arts Council's withdrawal of funding from the St Paul's Carnival Committee from Carnival Director Clio Lake by downloading a podcast online at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks also to Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers. If you're on the internet, you can hear all our previous shows all the way back to 2008 at thisweek.org.uk, which takes you straight to this show's links and our archives. I'm on Twitter at Tony Gosling, wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable few weeks over Christmas. We'll be back on the 8th of January. Do please join us for the politics show in January. And don't let the banksters get you down. In the meantime, I'll leave you with Consolidated. America number one.
There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T. Well, they certainly don't hedge their bets. I urge you to try and track down their recordings, if you've not already done so, and give them a serious listen. That's Consolidated, the last from them tonight, obviously. America Number One is the title of it. And
this is Bristol's BCFM on 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is...